questions, thoughts? Yes.
I have never listened to your show, so I don't know exactly. I mean, I'm a public school teacher, and I see what's wrong with it, but I don't know if what I think is wrong is the same thing that you think is wrong. I support vouchers. I support the fact that the money should follow the child. What exactly is your philosophy? Like, why do you see public school as such a horrible thing?
I have a feeling this might be our only question, folks.
No, I'm interested because I don't like the way it's going either, but...
Well, would you say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, would you think that maybe part of the problem is a lack of funding?
No.
Okay, all right, good. I don't think vouchers are a good idea. I see that as a Trojan horse to put more control, more government control in the hands of, or more control of private school in the hands of the government. And I see that as really a power play by the teachers union. I think that if the money that people pay in property tax was, then like distributed out or given back to people to use for their education, the cry would be, well, that's public money, right? Because once the government takes the money, it's their money. So they would say, if public money is going to these private institutions, then there needs to be all this new oversight over those institutions if they're going to be receiving public money. And I think that the teachers' unions would also jump into that and say, well, if these private school teachers are going to be receiving public money, they need to be held up to our rigorous standards. So, but I think that that would be what would happen. My problem with education, which I hope nobody minds, I didn't talk too much about it today, more about what I see as strategies for dealing with the impacts of government education, but I think that the government school system essentially now in America and as it has existed in other places post-Enlightenment is basically designed as a conduit that runs from the ideas and beliefs of central planners and intellectuals right into the minds of impressionable children. And I think if we use what happened in Prussia that became the Weimar, that became Nazi Germany, that's probably the best case study of where a government-run education system goes. I think it teaches, like I said in the speech, obedience, apathy, and conformity, because it's trying to produce a predictable populace. Right? Now this, I understand that this sounds like a conspiracy theory, but if you think about how small a group of people is that are trying to manage an entire society, it would almost be insane for them not to do this.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is July 10th, 2012, and we continue with the Porkfest micro series. All my events from the 2012 Porcupine Freedom Festival. And these, what you're going to hear today are some interviews from the live show, June 19th, 2012. Hour one, we had Stefan Molyneux sit in with us, and then hour two and into the after show, we brought on other people to sit in the third chair. So today we are going to hear from three of them. Unfortunately, there was more audio. Some of it was lost for some reason. A guy named Kirk McNeil, who lives around here and is a friend of mine, and he's got a couple of kids. I think I mentioned him in the Jake DeSillis show, just to thank him for some guidance that he gave me. He sat in with us for about a half an hour, and unfortunately the video from that has been lost. It was actually never recorded by the shitty Manycam software that I mentioned in, I think, an earlier installment. So that's too bad, because I think we had a great discussion for like 15 or 20 minutes, but I do have a few. Now, what you heard at the beginning of this show was an interaction that I had. It wasn't much of an interaction because I was the one holding the microphone, and unfortunately it wasn't a real forum where we could have had an appropriate amount of back and forth. The woman named Pam, who was a public school teacher, asked me this question, This was back in the spring of 2010 at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. Well, it was funny. I was at Porkfest, and we were running around getting ready to do the live show, and at about 9:30, I see her walking around outside the media room where we were broadcasting from. And I said, oh, you remember me? We talked at Liberty Forum, and we never really had a chance to have any real dialogue there, so do you want to come on the show and do a segment with us? So Pam, the public school teacher, I'm calling her that because I don't know if she would want her real name used here. She's the first interview that has the camcorder audio, and then we're going to switch to some other interviews. The first one you'll hear is Jake DeSillis from The Voluntary Life, and the third interview is with a guy named Cody Hall, who works with tragedyandhope.com. So I hope you find some of this interesting. The audio on the second and third interviews is better. And more stuff still to come. Hope you're enjoying this. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing, all the new subscribers. I've got quite a list of new subscribers. I didn't forget about new subscriber geography trivia. I know if you subscribed and you've been waiting for that and you're saying, there's some facts about where I live, I know. We'll get to it, I promise. Thanks again. Bye.
Yeah, thanks for doing it.
Yeah, thank you. It's an online community of people who promote critical thinking, look for history to see.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to School Sucks Live. I'm with me. Sorry, whoa.
That's interesting. I am also with me.
Crazy night.
With each other.
We are with each other. Now, no one knows who you are, but I'm Brett. Right. And you are.
Yeah, I couldn't even get a clap for it.
No, you're about to get a bit. You are about to get one of the most great roaring applauses of Porkfest so far. Your name?
Osborne.
Yeah! Oh, he's really the best. Yeah. And joining us now in the third chair is Pam. Pam, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I'm glad that I ran into you right before the show because we have we were supposed to talk a couple of years ago. I gave a speech at Liberty Forum in 2010. Very, very critical of public education. You asked me after the speech, I believe the question was, what would I do? I think it was something to that effect. Maybe you remember a little bit better than me. But we never got a chance to talk again. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do in public schools? You are still a public school teacher. And
yes, I am. I teach German and Spanish at a public school here in New Hampshire.
Yep.
And a 26-year veteran of teaching. I'm here in New Hampshire. I've taught in New York also.
And how do you feel about working in that system? Like, what do you see around you?
I resent the fact that it's failed because I got into it for two reasons. One, because I am a single parent, and it did seem like a very good profession for someone who was raising two kids by myself.
Sure.
The other reason was I truly believe that education is a good thing. And unfortunately, since the 1970s, when the federal government got involved, it's gone down. Public education has gone down.
And do you think that education is important? And that's one of the things that I tried to point out is that we really want to try on our show, our live show and on my podcast, to separate, you know, schooling from education. They're two different things. And you know, I really think that education is something that is self-directed, it's lifelong, it has to be intrinsically motivated. And I've never really felt, I mean, I didn't have a positive experience in school, but I never felt like that's what school was for me, or even what it was supposed to be, you know? And I know that there's plenty of caring teachers and really quality, skilled, intelligent teachers in these schools who go into it for all the right reasons. But is it possible that, you know, schooling and education are two very different things?
Yes, it is, especially nowadays. I went through public schools in New York, and I really felt that I got a good education. They were still teaching history. They were teaching geography. It just seems like the kids are not coming out with this knowledge anymore.
So do you think that, you know, as it's perpetuated, like a generation pumps out a generation, and I mean, you know, another generation, you have a son who's about little more than high school age, right?
Yes, he graduated from college.
Okay, so, you know, in his early 20s. That, what do you think is changing? You said the federal government's involvement, really?
Yes. Well, I can talk about recently the No Child Left Behind. What it does is it takes the school district, it takes all the kids, and it breaks them up into little tiny sections.
Yeah.
For example, you might have special ed, you might have minorities, you might have those on free lunch or reduced lunch. They just, as the federal government always does, it tries to break us up into little categories instead of unifying us.
Right.
And if one group does not do better on one of the exams for 2 years in a row,
yeah,
the school is said to be in need of improvement. Now, it's not just that one category, though. That's the problem. Your special ed kids, maybe they didn't do so well this year, but they did great the next year. But then your minority kids might have fallen back. And even though they did fine the first year and they fell back a little, they said, okay, well, there's your two strikes. You're in need of improvement. And it's to me, it looks like a way for the federal government to take over education. It's meant to fail. There's no way you're always going to have 100% of the kids do better the next year. You're never going to have 100% of anything.
Right. What do you think the impetus would be for the federal government to take over? I mean, what do you think the goal is there? Why would they want, who would it be, and why would they want control over something that, for a long time, I agree, has been more on a local and state level, even though I think there's always been, from the very beginning, going back to the Rockefeller Education Board at the end of the 19th century, there has been, you know, big groups of people who are looking at education as a national thing. And certainly funding is always local, you know, it comes from property taxes town by town. But what do you think the goal is of more consolidated control of education by the federal government?
I think it's what they're doing with everything, whether it's business, they want control. The power begets power.
Sure.
And I feel that that's what it is. Maybe they feel they know better than everybody else. They know better than the local person.
And just to shift directions a little bit here, have you ever looked into any of the Prussian stuff, the history of schooling, as far as Horace Mann's intentions, bringing it here from the Central European systems of the 19th century?
No, I haven't really.
Well, this was a real interesting discovery for me when I made it, that the American school system, I mean, obviously we learned about these people. We probably had similar higher education experiences if you were trained to be a teacher. I went to graduate school.
I actually wasn't trained to be a teacher.
Really?
I was pre-med in Spanish.
And you were able, through those credentials, to get...
Yes, I had enough credits to teach German and Spanish and science, but don't tell my principal that.
I get you. I was at one time looking at doing a similar thing using basically what they call the portfolio, from past experience to turn that into a certification. But we certainly heard names like John Dewey and Horace Mann, who's called the father of education. And, Mann... This type of system, putting kids together in this building, marching them through these routines, was borrowed from the Prussian system. And Prussia became the Weimar Republic and eventually Nazi Germany. But the system that was set up in the early 1800s to basically inculcate obedience, conformity, and state worship. And when I started to look more and more at the parallels between our society now, really in the last 15, 20 years, and the German society through the 19-teens and the 1920s and into the 1930s, it's pretty, it's terrifying. It's kind of shocking to see the similarities and to see how similar the education systems were. I mean, I think also that we never really have seen anything else, right? So you say you've got a good public school education. I was talking to this about this with my dad recently. He said he got a good public school education, but that's only compared to the terrible public school educations of today. Is it possible that there has never really been a terrific way to get educated by the government?
Oh, yeah, but I think what the big difference is, your dad and I were in school before the Department of Education,
yes.
And that, I think, is the big thing. A lot of people do not like tracking. But I like tracking both. As a parent, I liked it. Well, I wish my kids had been tracking. As a student, I like tracking because, and as a teacher, you put all the kids who want to learn in one class, and you can cover a lot of material. When you mix everybody together, you can't. You're teaching to the middle because there's going to be kids that are going to fall by the wayside if you push too much, and then the ones at the top get bored.
You know, you're, centralized control is something that you're critical of. I remember in our conversation before, you had asked a question after a speech I gave. You were also really critical of unions as well.
Yes. Yes.
You want to tell us about that real quick?
Sure. I don't choose to join a union. I'm an individual. I was taught to fight for myself and not depend on others. That's the way I was brought up, and that's the way I am. And if I have a problem with my boss, I'll go right to him about it. I don't like the idea that unions take your money and then they might spend it on politicians that you don't agree with.
Exactly. Pam, thank you so much for coming on. I'm glad we got to talk a little bit. Maybe we can do more in the future. This is School Sucks Live. Let's hear it for Pam. Let's hear it for Corpus.
You want me?
Yeah, I want to do a segment with you, and I want to just make sure.
Okay, just a quick note before these next two interviews. This actually is the audio comes from the mixer, and it's being recorded by the Manycam software, that same piece of software that I've been somewhat critical of thus far. It's choppy. It cuts a little bit here and there, so I just want to make sure you know that's me and not your iPod or whatever. It's listenable, but it's a little choppy in some parts. Okay. Hey everybody, and welcome back to School Sucks Live from Porkfest 2012. With me tonight, Osborne. How you doing? Listen, oh, they love Osborne. Listen to them. I think they're saying like woo. They're not cheering, but it sounds like woo. But I think it's more like woo. I think it's just like awe. Awe.
I don't know. It's late.
It is late. We've had a long day.
I want to hear about your long day, Mr. Got to drive in a motor car, experience air conditioning, see what Facebook looks like.
Yes.
While the rest of us are sunstroking here in the middle of the mountains.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was a good day. I got to drive a lot, listen to some podcasts in the car on the way, thought about jokes.
Very happy for you.
Yeah. And you're a very busy man, so I want to get right to our next guest, even though you're going to get to hear him for the first time very soon on School Sucks Podcast in the podcast feed. His name is Jake DeSillis. Jake, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I'm so glad that you're back. Jake's podcast is The Voluntary Life, and you joined me on stage like I was talking about in my presentation a couple of days ago. But we wanted to continue our discussion talking about the absence of an entrepreneurial education in public school all over the world, I assume it's the same. I assume it's the same where you came from, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things that you were touching on yesterday that I thought was really important, and I think we should expand on that here, and I'd be interested in hearing Osborne's feedback as well, is that young people don't need to feel like they can't do anything just because they're stuck in these schools. And you were saying the sooner you can try this stuff out, the more security that you can have when you try this stuff out, the better, right? Like, start young.
Yeah, definitely, in terms of getting into entrepreneurship, absolutely. Especially because, you know, this is like the thing that is totally absent from the school system. I mean, I was thinking about it, and all the things that you need to know in order to do your own business, how to sell, how to manage cash flow, you know, all of the types of skills that you need for entrepreneurship is the opposite to what you get in school. So I think the sooner you can actually get on and try it for yourself, the better.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, when
did you first realize, Osborne, that you wanted to, like, you didn't want to be somebody else's employee? Do you remember that feeling? Or that?
Man, I don't know. It just seems like something I've always thought.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I originally wanted to be a professor, right? Which is the closest thing to not having a real job, but still is working for someone else, right?
It still is, like, it's... appears to others that you are employed,
right?
If you are a professor,
right?
You might work something like 7-8 hours a week. You could make hundreds of thousands of dollars that way, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And get the whole summer off and all that good other good stuff. Every seventh year, get to take off and do what you want. But then I realized I had to deal with the students, and not so fun.
The kids who were pumped out of the high schools, sure. Right. So, but I think this is, and Jake, you'd probably agree that this is how we naturally feel. Like, we want to do things that, you know, give us like a personal sense of satisfaction. We don't exist for the purpose of pleasing other people, you know? So, was there a point for you guys in your education where you lost that and you said, and like you had to recover from, you had to get back what you felt when you were a little kid? Like, oh, I want to do things that excite me, that interest me. Do you remember that? Do you remember how it started?
Well, I was just going to say, actually, from what Osborne was saying about, you know, being a professor and the way that that sort of lifestyle goes, I think that's actually why you don't get any sort of insight into entrepreneurship at school or in college, because teachers are part of a system which, I mean, you don't have to have any of those skills to be a teacher. And that's why they're not really able to impart those skills, because you don't really have to know anything about selling, because you're not in the free market, and you don't really know anything about cash flow, because you know, you have a fairly secure job if you're a professor or whatever, you have tenure. So, you know, that's why I think those skills are totally missing. I spent a long time in college, and I did a postgraduate degree as well. For me, I just got bored. I mean, I was really interested in stuff that I was studying, and I was always really interested in learning. But I actually found that I was learning a lot more outside of, you know, of the sort of formal education system. So I got into entrepreneurship quite late, in my late 20s, and that's one reason I think it's a really good idea, if you can, to start earlier, because the sooner you can start, you know, the more opportunity you have to try things out.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like your story too, Osborne.
Sure. So I'm curious about this. How do you teach entrepreneurship? Because being an Austrian economist, we got Israel Kirzner's theory of entrepreneurship that is really nothing that can be taught. It's just a spark of inspiration that occurs in some people's brains around how to mix particular capital and labor to solve particular problems of providing goods and services in the marketplace.
I think the way that you can learn about entrepreneurship is by being around people who are actually doing it, and actually, you know, talking to people who are running businesses. So, you know, if you're in school or whatever, you can be exposed to people who are doing that. That's really the best way to learn, because then you can get exposure to people who are actually practicing it. And the other way of doing it is, of course, to just set up a business yourself.
So I would think that, you know, public school or even in the university system, those are two of the worst places you could be, as far as like the people who surround you and the people who are presenting themselves as authorities and potential mentors. Not that they're certainly not that they're all bad people, and some of them could even be entrepreneurs on the side, you know. But by and large, those are people who have a dream level of job security, you know, like can't be fired, and you know, really, really don't even in many ways exist in the economy, you know, just because there's no variables that really can affect them. I mean, I can't imagine that. I just think that all of those, like, so many stressors that normal, you know, middle class people have, just absolutely removed. And it doesn't mean that there haven't been situations in the last couple of years. I mean, I want to be fair. Like, a lot of these public school teachers were very concerned about what was going on in Wisconsin. They, you know, deals had been made with them, and they got a taste of what I think it's like for most people in, you know, for lack of a better description, the free market, to think they might have to compromise, like losing benefits. I talked to a teacher in Concord who said, I'm here to save my health care. I have three kids. You know, this is an agreement that this is what they told me I would get if I did this, you know? And I feel bad for those, those people as well, but for the most part, they don't exist in the economy that so many of the rest of us do.
So. Yeah, which means that if you're in school, you're just never going to get exposed to, you know, those kinds of problems. You're not going to be talking to people who are actually dealing with questions of, like, how am I going to sell this new product that I'm developing, and, you know, how am I going to manage my cash flow? So I think that's really the way to do it, is to meet people who are actually doing entrepreneurship themselves and just try it out.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It seems to me like the school system, like any other prison, is a perfect place to practice your entrepreneurial skills, right? Because you have all of these vast inefficiencies and problems that are just sitting there waiting to be solved. I mean, kids aren't even allowed to have, you know, diet soda in the schools anymore. So someone's got to figure out how to get those things inside there. I mean, not to mention all the other substances that find their ways.
Weren't you a young businessman in school?
I had a bit of an organized crime ring when I was in second grade, but I don't like to talk about that.
Providing substances that weren't available in school.
Well, I mean, the more prohibition there is, obviously, in these schools, and there's plenty of it, and they're finding new things to prohibit all the time, the more room there is for black markets to develop within the school.
Sure, and any more productive things, like particular topics that the folks might want to learn that aren't being taught in the classrooms. You know, there's ways of forming clubs and other kinds of associations to get those things done, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have to work outside the system even though you're stuck in the system.
This has been School Sucks Live. Jake, you want to plug your stuff real quick for us?
It's thevoluntarylife.com. It's the podcast.
Thank you so much for really classing up our show and getting us back on track here. I look forward to working with you in the future, and I'm glad to see you at Porkfest. We're going off LRN, but we are going to continue, and you will hear this in the podcast feed, the after show. Usually that's bonus content, but we still have plenty. I see at least three faces out there that I want to put in this third chair. So we will continue. I'm going to take about a 5-minute break, and then we'll be back. This is School Sucks Live from Porkfest. So we're going to continue talking to some people. Our next guest is Cody. You want to use your whole name?
Yes.
Cody Hall. And you are involved with some of my very good friends down in Connecticut at TragedyandHope.com. For people who are unfamiliar, do you want to tell us a little bit about what TragedyandHope.com is?
Sure. TragedyandHope.com is a fear-free zone of independent media producers that brings together anyone who is interested in searching for truth, so to speak, but coming at it from a logical, systematic form of critical thinking. Because so much, you can get lost in the internet. There will be all these different conspiracy holes and so forth, all these crazy ideas, and if you can't think, you're going to get lost. So we bring together many people of like minds, media hosts, our producers, like Brett the Knot of School Sucks Podcast, like someone like Unplugged Mom, other things like CorbettReport.com, of other people who want to put forth independent media that's not corporate funded, that's not propaganda funded, in order to fill this void of this junk that's being pushed out of us every day. And we found through such much of our research that one of the critical points or critical issues is that critical thinking has been removed from schooling, with compulsory schooling and removing cause and effect, so we can't think. Many Americans have become incoherent to where we're just following our emotions, listening to authorities, and this community is about realizing our incoherence and growing out of it intellectually by teaching ourselves.
So responding to the stuff instead of just having these conditioned reactions.
Correct.
To that stuff. And what are some of the ways when you talk about fear free? I mean, what are you contrasting that with? Like you said, this fear free zone of communication. Like, what do you contrast that with besides the mainstream media?
I would contrast that with my experience in compulsory schooling. You're going through these classes, and you're said, like, this is what you're supposed to learn. You're going to take this test, and if you question any conclusion that I'm providing you, you're going to fail. You're going to fail. You may get in trouble. Even if you speak up in class, if you clash with the teacher's ideas, you're going to get reprimanded. And that instills, it's still a top to someone's creativity and thinking outside the box. And from my research, that has been done on purpose, actually. So, but that's how I would contrast it to answer your question.
Right. So it's not threat-based. It's learning, but not threat-based learning.
Correct. I would agree with that.
And do you ever think that some of the stuff, I mean, you look at some of the stuff that they've covered on tragedyandhope.com, some things that a lot of people, like on the Peace Revolution podcast or on Media Monarchy or
Corbett Report,
some of these topics are really kind of push people like away at first. Like they're things that they don't want to talk about because they consider them to be, conspiratorial. I'm trying to think of an example, like things that are extremely real, like mm-hmm. eugenics, for example.
Correct.
Right. But eugenics sounds like a HAARP style conspiracy theory mm-hmm. to a lot of people. So what do you think the best way when we have these things like, you know, Fabian socialism, which, mm-hmm. Stefan Molyneux, who was a historian when I had him, I was getting his advice about the American Way series that I produced, and I was asking him if I was on the right track, and he's like, yeah, that's definitely the conspiracy that worked, the out-in-the-open conspiracy, Fabian socialism, mm-hmm. of this gradual process of kind of turning up the water on the frog.
Exactly.
So, I mean, there is – history is conspiracy, and a lot of these things are very real, but people have a real apprehension about – pursuing them, talking about them. I have obviously stayed away from things on my show because I don't see, and I think Osborne, you would agree that we don't see the productivity of, introducing the idea of, you know, mass long-term conspiracies, because I think that they're not empowering. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not empowering to feel like the world is run by a small group of people and always has been. To a certain extent, it might be true, but, you know, it might be different groups at different times latching on to similar ideas. But how do you go about introducing that stuff to people? Because it, like, context is good and understanding history is good. It is good to know that there is this movement called Fabian socialism that began in Great Britain in the early 1900s as a gradual plan, like named after the Fabian strategy mm-hmm. of slowly defeating your enemy by going around behind them and, you know, cutting off their supplies and like total war, basically. Mm-hmm. So how do you introduce these things to people without pushing them away too fast? What do you think of that?
It's a tough question. It's something I've dealt with because I came into even the liberty movement from the conspiratorial side of things. And I agree that it can be a dead end because I found myself quite angry. And as you said, these huge ideas that you can't affect any change. So I'd initially come from there. Then coming from the liberty side, with the help of a lot of your work, I'm able to then work on personal aspects of stuff that I can actually change. That's so very important. I think that's important to deal with first, because without self-knowledge, you're going to just fall into ideologies that fit your preconceived unprocessed trauma, in my opinion. It's something that Stefan Molyneux goes into. This is something I'd found myself with, being attracted to 9/11 type stuff due to stuff my parents said to me as a child, not listening to me. But
sure, but politics itself, yeah. You're right. Politics itself is that, right? It does seem to be about acting out this past trauma. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like cowboy, like this fantasies of aggression against people you've been tricked into not liking. And there's a situation, and here are the bad guys, and I'm doing the good thing. I think that conspiracy, a lot of this, conspiracy stuff is set up in the same way, mm-hmm. right? And it never goes anywhere. It never accomplishes anything. Some of these things might be entirely the truth. right? But because of the way they're presented, there's this thing called Bilderberg. Mm-hmm. It's all the powerful people in the world.
Yeah, I was there 2 weeks ago.
Right, right. But you were outside, right?
Yeah, there you
so
go.
There's this thing called Bilderberg, right? It's the most powerful people in the world. Mm-hmm. All the decisions about the world are made there.
Shaping group.
You're not invited, right? So it's disempowering.
Correct.
If you don't have a context to see it through. So, and Osborne, you've always wanted to stay away from this stuff. You know, you've been very careful about some of these topics, right?
Right, or more appropriately, I don't want to recreate it. So we've got the VIP tent down the hill, right? So it's kind of like our Porkfest Bilderberg group, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely. What decisions have we made
been
in there?
Yeah, well, the decision to make either regular margarita or strawberry margarita.
But are you empowering coercion? Are you forcing your views upon the rest? And again, I understand where you're coming from, though, and it's something I've dealt with, because a good compelling argument from the Liberty Stefan side is like, we can focus on 9/11, we can focus on all this stuff, and these people could, hey, we know the government's killed people, look at Vietnam.
Yeah, sure.
So that's why I feel it's important first to look at a solution like liberty, like voluntarism, and then if you still have an interest in historical context of what's going on, I still feel there is some value there, but it's not absolutely necessary. And certain factions want to force it down your throat, and I don't think that's necessary, but it's still good to know why.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with background knowledge, because sometimes people who have a good grasp of argumentation, rhetoric, and the logic of putting ideas together and removing contradictions. Mm-hmm. If there's a vacuum in their background knowledge, somebody might hit them with a question, that they can't answer because they don't have the information, and their argument just kind of accidentally deflates because of that, right? Even though they were doing everything right, it's just they have some missing knowledge, and we're always going to have some missing knowledge, and we're always going to be learning new things. But I think a lot of times people have this resistance to exploring certain things. But I think a lot of it, too, is that we have explored these things in the past. And these were real hot topics for a long time. And we just didn't see how to get anything productive out of them. And I think, Osborne, that was what your criticism was. And as far as starting the our own Bilderberg group, the first decision that you talked about being made, I wasn't a part of it. So, Cody, it looks like actually now there's an inner circle within this esoteric society.
The Illuminati formula, based on the Jesuits.
Yes, right. Yeah. So we've moved even deeper in, and there's an inner core that I'm apparently being kept out of. But you want to tell us a little bit about what's coming up for Tragedy and Hope, what you're involved in, and what we can look forward to in the past. I see you've been passing out this DVD.
We're normally this physical copy, four-disc DVD, five-hour interview set with John Taylor Gatto last year. It's normally $55. We're selling it half off for $25 at Porkfest for the week. However, it's free online at YouTube, and I've also brought data DVDs of what I'm passing out if people can't afford it that I'm giving out for free, just to get the information out there. And he had a stroke a month after this had taken place.
Yeah.
So some of the money that from the purchases is actually going to help him and recuperate, as well as just help the productions, help fund the productions, because we take no corporate money, and it's completely on donations. So that's one of the past projects. The newer projects that we're working on is something called History So It Doesn't Repeat. Because what we find is that most news, as Stefan Molyneux was talking earlier on the show, most news is just going out to your confirmation bias. It's really just opinions. There's no real facts there. So there is a market void that we need some critical thinking and some critical media. And what we're bringing to the table with that is, right now it's, I think, every other week, but is a getting together. We'll be doing interviews on just current events, and it's nothing real ritzy, but just taking critical thinking and logically going through the grammar of who, what, when, where, why. The logic, removing contradictions, is their appeal to authorities, or their different ideas that they're using rhetorical tricks to trick you into believing, and then using rhetoric to get these ideas across. So we'll have kind of official setting interviews, also something called Tragedy Hope Casual Cafe, which is kind of like what we're doing right here.
Yeah.
But via Ustream through the Tragedy and Hope community, while bringing other members, it's free to join, to join in either through chat or a lot of times off-site via video, to just help each other learn and see in the light direction.
Oh, Cody, thank you. Or you want to?
Yeah, yeah. I want to tackle something here. So yeah. you made a few disparaging comments there about corporate funding of media. Now, I have corporations and I use them to fund projects and media, and I'm just curious to know what the issue is.
That's a very valid question, because I also believe in free market economics. So I believe where the point that they're coming from is that most quote-unquote mainstream media has huge, huge corporate funding, not just corporations, but funding that's tandem with state regulations and, I guess, fascistic organizations to push state propaganda mouthpiece. So instead of corporate funding, said state fund. We're not state corporate-funded media, and it's a very valid argument or point. And thank you for making
sure. Well, and even if it's not state corporate funded, it's still driven by the state, right? Because the reason a person would have to use a corporation to fund something is to get around the dirty tax code so that you can actually get something for your money.
I agree. Right? I understand. And point well taken.
Yeah,
thank you for making it.
And I think true. Like, just a simple example, in everyday mainstream news would be, we don't know. Most people do not know that pharmaceutical drugs kill more people a year than illegal drugs, because you're not going to hear about that on Fox News, which is just something to do between erectile dysfunction commercials. You're not going to hear that on MSNBC. You're not going to hear that on CNN, because those media outlets are not for young people. You can tell from the commercials that play during the breaks. So they will, you look at like NBC, which is owned by GE, which is a huge defense contractor.
Military industrial complex.
There's a real spider web once you start to look at this stuff. And I think that would be a more specific example of what you're talking about. Am I right?
Correct.
Well, Cody, thank you so much for coming here and for not just coming on the show and sharing with us, but sharing these data DVDs with everybody, and spreading the awareness about Tragedy and Hope, because I've been trying to do more crossover between the LRN folks and Tragedy and Hope for a long time, and I hope you can take advantage of this festival to.
Definitely, and I appreciate you being that crossover, because I feel that you're so very important to bringing the good things on both sides together, so there isn't any disparaging issues back and forth.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's hear it for Cody, everybody. All right, we're going to bring up somebody else in just a minute here. I just want to deal with a few technical issues.
Thank you for calling me out on that, because I was using their rhetoric. because I'm totally on your side on that.